Today on Maine Calling, what's the latest on eating a healthful diet? Federal dietary guidelines have evolved over the decades. Starting a century ago, the government spelled out suggestions on food groups, serving sizes, and nutrients. Then came the limits on fats, sweets, and alcohol. By 1992, we had the food pyramid. And by 2011, My Plate showed up with a picture of what a balanced meal looked like, with fruits, vegetables, protein, and grains on the plate. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we learn about the latest guidelines from the Department of Health and Human Services. It features an upside-down food pyramid that has raised questions about its methods and recommendations, from red meat to beef tallow. What do experts say about the latest evidence on diet and nutrition? And what does it take to change eating habits? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services rolled out a new version of the food pyramid last month, prompting confusion over changes to earlier recommendations for healthy eating. Today, we'll talk about the evolution of dietary guidelines and what the latest research says about nutritious food choices. Joining me, Lori Cayley, is a registered dietitian nutritionist and project director for SNAP Ed at the University of New England. Jane McLucas is Director of Child Nutrition for the Maine Department of Education, and Christy Matheson is licensed dietitian and Maine State Representative from Kittery. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about the new federal guidelines on eating well? What changes have you made to eat more healthfully? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Note that our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one they're giving out right now for Maine Public's membership drive. So the Maine Calling number again, 1-800-399-3566. And thank you all for joining us. Lori, I'm going to start with you because we're talking about nutrition and diet today because of the federal dietary guidelines that were announced last month by the DHHS led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It features what's been called an inverted food pyramid, wide at the top, narrow at the bottom. It's got meats and dairy and veggies at the top and then whole grains at the bottom. So it's gotten, I'd say, a lukewarm reception among experts in diet and nutrition. So could you sum up for us some of the things that stand out about those new guidelines to you?
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here this morning. So what stands out to me is that right now, the major cause of disease and death in the United States for adults is cardiovascular disease. And we know that some of the dietary risk factors for cardiovascular disease are saturated fat intake that can come from meat, whole fat dairy, butter, lard, beef tallow. And what these guidelines show in a prominent position at the top of the inverted pyramid, if you will, is a large slab of steak, a carton of whole fat milk, some hard cheeses that also contain saturated fat, and it looks like a brick of butter. So we also know that, so that's inconsistent with the scientific evidence about what is healthy for Americans to consume. And we also know that Americans consume adequate dietary protein, and we want to see and so we don't need to increase protein recommendations, which are coming out of these dietary guidelines. We want Americans to be consuming more fiber, more plant-based protein sources, beans, legumes, nuts, seeds. And we want folks to eat more fruits and vegetables, which we know Americans are not consuming enough of. and to consume whole grain foods, not refined grains. So the biggest concern really is the emphasis on the meat, the saturated fat, and even though the actual 10-page guidelines say that saturated fat needs to be reduced to 10% or less of total calories, that's the same as the previous dietary guidelines. The graphic and some of the other language in those guidelines do not reflect that, and that's a big concern.
So you just said previous dietary guidelines. I know we're familiar with an old food pyramid, but there have also been a lot of other recommendations coming from the government over the years, pretty much changing pretty often. So can you just walk us quickly through what has come through from the federal government over the years in terms of dietary guidelines for Americans? There's a lot of versions that we've seen.
Yes, absolutely. So the dietary guidelines have been developed jointly by Departments of Agriculture and Health and Human Services and come out every 5 years since 1980. And over the years, the graphic has changed and the actual amount of scientific evidence and the documents have changed in terms of number of pages. For over about 20 years, the dietary guidelines has been a really comprehensive document that policymakers and health professionals have used to provide the underpinning of federal nutrition programs such as school meals and WIC. And then there's been consumer-facing materials such as the Food Guide Pyramid to show sort of where the emphasis should be on the amount of foods in the diet. We haven't used the pyramid since 2011, so for 15 years. We're now using, we previous to this year, have been using the MyPlate. And there's been a lot of resources based on the MyPlate on the website. There's been an app. And the plate is nice because it sort of emphasizes how we eat. We eat off of a plate. We might eat off of a napkin or off of our hand, but we eat off of a plate. So the inverted pyramid, if you want to call it that, again, doesn't necessarily it's tell you sort of the proportion of the diet in a way that is more realistic for consumers.
That was the thing with my plate, right? There's a picture, it's a circle of a plate, and it's got amounts or its proportions for grains and protein. What was it?
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Half of the plate is fruits and vegetables, about a quarter protein, about a quarter whole grains, and then there's a cup for dairy or other beverages, alternate beverages to dairy as well that have those same nutrients. So it was a little more representative, and it was developed with consumer input. This graphic for these dietary guidelines did not have consumer input into how they would look.
Sure. And I'm going to turn to you, Christy, because Lori mentioned a couple times the scientific evidence is something that was lacking on some of these changes to the most recent guidelines. So talk about that in terms of why health professionals emphasize that food guidelines have to be based on scientific evidence and what criticism has come up with these new guidelines because of that.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Cindy. I think it's really important to understand that this independent advisory committee that actually addresses the science, how it evolves over time, and how that impacts people's bodies and their disease states is a really important component of bringing these recommendations forward. This recent recommendation basically didn't have this independent advisory committee that follows some pretty strict interest, conflict of interest rules. As full, like Lori was indicating, it has a full public transparency. They really want to make sure that what nutrition specialists are recommending are actually matching up with what the evidence says. And I think that a couple of things that I have some real concerns about, because these most recent guidelines don't really show that there was public transparency, that there was a lot of science behind it. There's some real conflicts of interest that that I'm concerned about. I think that if you look at some of the inconsistencies with these recommendations, like Lori had indicated, they put a top tier on saturated fats and proteins that have a high level of saturated fat, but at the same time, they keep the evidence-based recommendation that you should only eat 10% of your total diet of saturated fat. So there's inconsistencies between what their visual is saying and what they actually say for a recommendation. Like also, for example, they say eat more fruits and vegetables, but they cut that target almost in half for 3 servings of vegetables and 2 of fruit. So it becomes inconsistent with what the evidence shows in terms of benefiting my patients in optimizing their health. Some other inconsistencies about recommending essential fatty acids, but then you don't see any real conspicuous sources of essential fatty acids like nuts and seeds. Those are conspicuously absent or very far down on that recommendation. And I also think the other thing, even not just science-based nutrition background, but the environmental blind spots here are really glaring to me. We have shown over decades that plant fibers are really, really important to eat, but that those aren't really included in those recommendations.
Yeah, we have a lot to drill down, but I want to talk to Jane for a moment because she has to leave a little early. So thank you for all those great points, Christy. Jane, I just want to turn to you because when we think of things like the food pyramid, we often connect that to school lunches. That's something that determines how child nutrition is shaped. But does the new food pyramid actually determine anything when it comes to child nutrition in Maine?
Absolutely. The DGAs are the current standards, and the meal pattern for the National School Lunch Program is based on the DGAs, and
The
it changes every
DGA
5 years. The
dietary
dietary
guide.
guidelines.
Okay,
Sorry.
great. That's okay. It's the lingo.
Yep, it's the lingo. So current standard meals already meet the dietary guidelines for Americans. But we are still in progress. We're still working on reducing the added sugars and the sodium content of our meals. And those guidelines will go into effect for 2027. So while the dietary guidelines have been released, we will need congressional changes to the meal pattern. And we'll see those probably 27, 28-ish. They did say that they were going to try and rush them, but we'll see what happens. But like I said, we are still working on the ones from last time, so we'll see how fast those come in. But you know what? Maybe that's good. You know, maybe some of the concerns about the guidelines will be addressed before they actually make it into congressional statute, and a meal pattern that we are required to follow.
So if they don't get changed or addressed, does that mean that kids' meals will suddenly have like a lot more red meat in them than they did before? I mean,
We'll
how
see
does
what
it
happens.
translate?
Yeah, we're not sh we don't we won't know how it translates into regulation until it actually happens. So we leave that to the legislators and the Department of the USDA to make those changes in regulation and push those down. But like Lori said, you know, they didn't address sodium. It's still the old standard, so those things won't change. We still have five components. I don't think we'll see a change in those. They may increase protein, maybe, but other than that, I don't think that we'll see a lot of changes within the meal pattern.
And
Um,
this
or I'm
is
hoping we don't see a lot.
right. This is breakfast, snacks, lunches. It's not just school lunch people think of.
Correct. All of
Okay.
those
Just one more
programs.
quick question before we go. I just want to know with kids, obviously, the conundrum is always the fact that as soon as you try to offer as many healthy choices as possible, kids just kind of tend to like the junkier foods, right? And they throw you hear about them throwing out the apple, throwing out the broccoli. What do you do to balance that and make it appealing to kids to eat and still keep it healthful?
I always used to say, you give them what they like and what they're willing to try. We promote try it days at school, so they try different things. A lot of schools have salad bars, so there's different choices for different children to choose. And we're rolling in a lot of local foods into the schools. So we're doing a lot of work with farmers and trying to bring in some local food that maybe they've already worked on in the garden. Maybe they've grown those carrots. And when you can make those connections, students tend to try those foods more often.
Well, great. Thank you. I know you need to get going, Jane. That's Jane McLucas, and she is the Child Nutrition Director with the Maine Department of Education. We're going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, so how to get kids to eat properly? It's a question for many of us, including myself. I was listening intently at the end of that segment. Hi, Keith Shortall here, senior editor at Maine Public, along with my colleague Luke Merkel, and we're taking just a few minutes out of the program here on this first day of our winter fundraiser to ask you to support this program. It's as simple as that, right? Maine Public is, I'm sure, important to you because you're listening right now, which is evidence enough that you rely on this kind of programming. In this case, interesting dive into the changes in public guidance around nutrition, Luke.
Yeah, Keith. Maine Calling, you can always rely on Maine Calling to deliver current events with local relevance, whether that's, local dietitians talking about their input on the new guidelines to what the schools and farmers and how they are responding to helping keep our society more nutritious. And we need your help to keep the public media environment healthy here in Maine. So please take a moment and become the next supporter of your public radio station by calling 1-800-866-1475.
1-800-866-1475. Yesterday, we heard about the expanding presence of gambling in our culture, not just around the realm of sports, but in everything. You can bet on anything these days. Tomorrow, I will take the seat and host a program about the kind of historic importance of basketball, the game of basketball. And of course, tourney time is right around the corner. And then on Friday, we'll talk about the importance of the Declaration of Independence as a document in the founding of our country that still, of course, has importance today. So this is kind of what Maine Calling does. It kind of it sort of finds the topics that are of interest to people at the moment and invites them in. You can call a different number for that, by the way. The number to show support for this program is 1-800-866-1475, or you can go online to Maine Public.
That's such a good point, Keith. Maine Calling wouldn't be possible if we didn't have the input from people across the state and beyond who call in or email the show. And Maine Public Radio, more generally, more broadly, wouldn't be possible without our member contributions. So we're taking a little moment out of Maine Calling today for the pledge drives like this that help fuel public radio, not just for this year or the next 10 years, but for really the next generation. So when you make that call, you're supporting local programs like Maine Calling. So please, 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. Won't you be our next member?
$10 a month, $35 a month, $60 a month, whatever works for you. The important point here is that you become part of this community effort to provide news that is fact-based, and we're a nonprofit, so the focus is about doing the news and the public affairs, and that's really why we're here. 1-800-866-1475 or online, mainepublic.org.
Yep. Consider not only your food diet, but also your media diet and what the role that Maine Public Radio plays in it, the role that Maine Calling plays in it. And please help support that by calling 1-800-866-1475. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking with experts in diet and nutrition in order to better understand what's what with the new federal dietary guidelines. My guests are Christy Matheson. She's licensed dietitian and a state legislator. And Lori Cayley is a registered dietitian nutritionist and SNAP Ed project director at UNE. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you find challenging about eating more healthfully? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also comment on Facebook or Instagram. You can also give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to a caller now. This is Barry calling in from Portland. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for this topic. It's so important, particularly with the high costs of health care and insurance in this day and age. I say regarding RFK's change in the pyramid is follow the money. This seems driven by lobbyists more than science. I mean, the science is all pointing to the importance of gut biome health. I'm a former nutritionist dietitian, and it's so important to understand how our gut microbiota fed by fiber or polyphenols, which are all connected to plants and not animals. This affects neurotransmitters and our mental health. It also, our gut biome is responsible for 70% of our immune system function. You know, Americans on the standard American diet, which is SAD, are deficient in fiber. Animal products don't contain any. And our diet is one of the top causes of disease and death in the United States. And I just say, follow the money. There are so many really good, responsible sites available to everybody online on their website for free with good nutrition information that's available. And
thank you, Barry. Yeah, I'm gonna turn to our panelists too. They're nodding vigorously, so I'm gonna hear what they have to say. Thanks for calling. And Lori, this idea of following the money, there's a lot of concern about industry influence on the new guidelines. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what a fabulous caller with so much great information. And you know, obviously she's well informed and educated about nutrition and health. So the dietary guidelines, again, published every 5 years, about 2 years in, a Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is formed with very well-respected, nationally known, established researchers in nutrition, medicine, and health. And they work for about 2 years in a voluntary capacity. The vetting process and selection process of those committee members is transparent. The work that they do to put together and look at the scientific research of the methodology is transparent, and that's where the recommendations come from. They produce a scientific report, very long, usually about 400 pages. So that was developed. There was a Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee for these dietary guidelines, which then this administration ended up putting together a panel of 9 nutrition scientists and subject matter experts, and they were selected through a federal contracting process. 7 out of the 9 have financial ties to the meat, dairy, and supplement industries. And they put together what they call the Scientific Foundation for the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, about a 90-page document, and then a 400-page document of appendices, which pretty much they spent the time kind of refuting what the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee had done. The concern was that the original Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee was basing recommendations on health equity, which, as we know, if you don't put equity into the review process and the scientific process, it will essentially get ignored. And that's a very important, We know that people who experience race, health, and social inequities are disproportionately affected by disease in our country, disease and death. So that would have been important for us to use that report. But this panel with ties to the meat and dairy and supplement industries, financial ties, again, they ignored that. And they ignored a lot of the evidence of the original guidelines.
Right. So I'll turn back to you, Christy. Barry mentioned, you know, the emphasis on meat as the protein. So protein is one of the biggest areas that this new recommendation focuses on, but it's meat based. Talk more about this lack of recommendations on fiber and why that matters?
Well, we, in terms of just going a little further with what the caller had started to mention about with the healthy microbiome, to not to get too scientific, but bottom line is, in order to have healthy bacteria, you need healthy fiber to procreate good microbiome. And microbiome is, most of the callers here probably have heard of a probiotic, which is just basically a bacteria. And if we have an optimally formulated microbiome in our gut, then we ultimately have a much better inflammatory cascade. So in other words, we don't tend to be inflamed, and we don't tend to have as many problems with disease states when we have more fiber from our plant sources that feed this bacteria. There's many, many ways of getting the essential amino acids through plant fibers. It's not just based on animal proteins. You can get your essential amino acids through soybeans. You can get it through combining a lot of things that most people actually combine, like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with a whole grain piece of bread. All of those things combined give you a really great source of protein, as well as those fibers that are really important for optimal health. Soluble fiber helps with bowel regularity. I have a lot of patients that come to see me, and we talk about poop all the time. And whether or not someone can or can't, or it has a little bit more. And that fiber is so important in your ability to be able to have a normal bowel movement. And that tells a big story for me, for my patients. If it's okay, Cindy, I did want to just mention that I fully agree with Lori. I think that the public deserves confidence that these guidelines reflect the science rather than a political or industrial influence. I think that it's really important to understand that there's not a single nutritionist or dietitian through my 25 years that I've been in this industry that has ever recommended someone have a highly processed dietary intake. So in some respects, I'm thankful that this food pyramid came out with that focus, that evidence-based focus to decrease your intake of processed foods. But I've never recommended to my patients eat processed foods and a lot of sugar. So this is not new.
That was actually that was on my list of what to ask you about, because that's what jumped out at me was, the more positive comments about the new guidelines are, at least, they said don't eat highly processed foods, but it sort of felt like no duh. Like, I don't think that anyone was saying to eat those, but that does bring up that I wanted to ask, Lori, I'll go back to you for this about processed foods. I mean, the technical definition of processed food is that something has been done to it, right? So even frozen peas or packaged spinach is processed. But when we're talking about ultra processed or highly processed, that's the junk foods that we tend to think about, right? I mean, what would fall into that category?
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. And I appreciate too what Christy just said as well. I think that right now the dietary guidelines have never emphasized processed food, highly processed foods or ultra processed foods. And what we know from consumer research is consumers want to hear positive messages, even though all these guidelines do share, kind of what not to do. The primary approach needs to be, and the focus needs to be, on what to do. People want to know, what should I eat? What should I emphasize? And then in federal nutrition programs, that comes through, and that's what's feeding our children, as Jane was able to share. Right now, there is no definition of highly processed or ultra processed foods. Fortunately, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has it on their work plan to create a definition for ultra processed foods. I'm not sure how long that will take, but it will be good to have that so that we could point to that. There's a lot of research being done on the impact of ultra-processed foods on human health. And I think that's what these guidelines are pointing towards, that some of the research is showing that a diet high in ultra-processed foods, you're not able to get the nutrients you need for optimal health. So again, like you just said, Cindy, a loaf of bread is wheat that's been processed from a grain growing like a grass in the ground to a loaf of bread. Taking peas and parboiling them and freezing them and putting them in a bag, that's a process. I think so, most people can probably say, I know what a highly processed food is, something that's in a box or a bag on a shelf that has a lot of ingredients, and then you look at it and you're not sure what that food is made from. But there is no definition. So the emphasis on whole foods, the emphasis people talk about the perimeter of the supermarket where you need to shop or should shop. But there's so many great foods that are important that are processed, ready to eat cereals that have a low sugar profile. Are a great source of vitamins and minerals and nutrients and fiber for children and adults alike. Even milk or unsweetened low-fat yogurt is a processed food. So, again, I'd love to see what the definition ends up being, but shop the perimeter, shop for whole foods and nutritious foods. And I really believe, as Christy mentioned, that a plant-based diet is really important as well.
Well,
We can,
I'm going to squeeze in a follow-up with that, though. As far as the processed foods go, I mean, the fact is, it's you work with SNAP, so it's a lot of lower income families. It's not realistic to preach to people to go out and buy a bunch of fresh produce and meat a lot of times, right? It's not so easy on many fronts for them to buy non-processed foods.
Exactly. And actually, we recommend using canned foods and using frozen foods, using dry foods. It can be more economical. You can take something out of the freezer and pour a little bit into a casserole dish or for a side dish or into a soup, and the rest doesn't go bad, And so there's a lot of real benefits to using foods that have been processed to be stored safely and that are safe from a food safety perspective. And not everybody has access to fresh fruits and vegetables or, wants to pay for those as well.
Okay, we do need to take another break. We will get to Joanne calling in after the break. We will be right back.
Good morning. You're listening to Maine Public Radio's Winter Fundraising Drive. My name is Luke Merkel, and I'm joined by Senior News Editor Keith Shortle. And we're here to remind you that, these fundraising drives are an excellent opportunity for you to show your love for programs like Maine Calling and all the trusted independent news and information that you get from Maine Public Radio. And how do you do that? You call 1-800-866-1475, and we have a room full of eager volunteers here in the Portland studio ready to take your call.
Sometimes, I was out for dinner the other night with some friends, and my friends said, I just can't take the news. I don't listen to the news anymore. It's too upsetting. But sometimes you just have to take a deep breath, step back, and look at the facts, right? Just parse out the fact. Look at what we know, what we know about what works, what doesn't work, what's time tested, what authorities and experts say about this. This is what we do in the realm of journalism, and you're listening to it right now in this program about the new dietary guidelines. If this is of value to you, and we think that it must be since it's a part of your daily life, give us a call. Show your support for this program and for others on Maine Public. The number 800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org.
Yeah, Keith, these are, Maine Calling is always such a great source of information that enriches, my own life. But also I find myself kind of having conversations in the community about what I've heard on Maine Calling. And I think, what you just said about covering all these great, interesting topics for the state of Maine, but also you're able to pivot in a way. And I know last week your team pivoted to cover the increased immigration enforcement presence. So it just an amazing job kind of shifting and you know, when the community wanted to know what they could do and what the resources were available. And Maine Calling did such a great job last week in kind of in shifting and making and focusing on this topic. So when you call 1-800-866-1475, that is the type of kind of customizable information that Maine Calling is getting to you.
Yeah, I can't say enough about my colleagues at Maine Calling, and Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn and Jennifer Rooks, who, as you say, you know, really pivoted, did a lot of work lining up folks for five consecutive shows, because that's what people were thinking about and were worried about and were talking about. And Maine Calling provides this statewide forum where, you know, sometimes when something's happening, all you want to do is be heard. You want to tell somebody something. And in this case, we get to share your thoughts with your entire, I was going to say, like-minded community. Maybe there are some who disagree, but for the most part, it's a community of people who feel passionate about these issues and want to discuss them. The number, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainepublic.org.
And then tomorrow, you know, get ready, because Keith is hosting tomorrow on the, in the topic of basketball. So make sure you get ready and call that and call in tomorrow, or email 1-800-866-1475. That is not the calling for number for Maine Calling. It is the number to support programs like Maine Calling. Again, 1-800-866-1475. Your support goes so far in helping Maine Public Radio reach the entire state of Maine with a growing network of FM signals that keep it free and accessible over the air. You know, there's no paywall, there's no Patreon that you have to donate to listen to Maine Calling. It is free over the air, online, for you, because of you. So please take a moment and make that call, 1-800-866-1475.
And you can make it easy for you and for us with an ongoing monthly donation as an evergreen friend, whatever level works for you. It's here for you to show your support for this programming. 1-800-866-1475, mainepublic.org, and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking about new federal dietary guidelines, what's in it, what makes sense, what doesn't, and how to make changes to your diet successfully. With me are Lori Cayley, she's dietitian, nutritionist, and SNAP Ed director at UNE, and Christy Matheson is a naturopathic dietitian. Share your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. We do have the caller on the line now, Joanne, calling from Naples. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. Thank you for this program. I was raised in Boston in a meat and potatoes Irish family. So if meat wasn't served for dinner, it wasn't really considered dinner. But I moved to California and found that cattle were using up all the water supplies. So I became a modified vegetarian very quickly. And I have been following a Mediterranean diet for many, many years. A coworker introduced me to quinoa, and I found a product called Seeds of Change. It's an organic product. It's quinoa and brown rice, and I found it very versatile, and I'm not Martha Stewart by any means, so I encourage people also to look at the Hannaford website. They're offering dietitian classes on different topics, but my reason for the call was to find out what is a pre-probiotic. I'm used to having Greek yogurt, plain Greek yogurt for the probiotics, but I wondered if you could give me a source of pre-probiotics and what exactly that does in the body.
Thank you for that question, Joanne. Christy, now when you go shopping in the grocery store, everything's either a pre or probiotic, so clarify that. You were talking about the gut biome earlier.
Sure. Great question. And basically, the definition of a prebiotic is just a fiber that doesn't get digested in your GI tract. And it is the primary sources of, like I had indicated before, of a prebiotic are fibers from plant fibers. So, you know, garlic, onions, leeks, you know, a lot of different fruits and vegetables, oats, flaxseed, those all really help your body function better and helps your GI tract function better. So the prebiotic is really what feeds your probiotic. So it feeds the bacteria. So a probiotic is just the bacteria. The prebiotic is actually the fiber that feeds that. And what happens is then you've probably heard of postbiotics too. So we have pre, pro, and post. But postbiotics are basically short-term, short fatty acids that are produced from that fiber being eaten by those bacteria. And that helps with optimal health. It decreases inflammatory responses. It helps you with digestion. It helps you with tolerance to food, all really great things. But you have been able to buy prebiotics your whole life because they're basically plant fibers.
But probiotics, then it's, you know, there's people who buy the little pills or tablets or gummies, and then there's yogurts that have it added, or, you know, there's a whole range there too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And typically, if you get it in a supplement form, you're going to just have billions of bacteria in that versus a yogurt, you would have to eat significantly more. I don't want to get too much into supplements because we don't want to advise that on at a medical level, but you're absolutely right. There's many people that take probiotics as a supplement, and you have to understand there are bacteria, they have to stay alive. So if you do take them, put them in the fridge once you open them up.
Okay, Lori, I have to talk about beef tallow because it's very funny that with these new dietary guidelines, all of a sudden beef tallow is in the news, and I don't think most people use it or know really what it is. So tell us a little bit about what it is and why ostensibly it's being recommended and what things to watch out for about that.
So beef tallow is the fat from beef. And if we go into sort of all fats or a combination of saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, and polyunsaturated fats. Saturated fats, you think of, there's things that are hard at room temperature. So when you look at a piece of meat, you see the white fat on it that's hard at room temperature. The skin on poultry, you know, a hard piece of cheese has some saturated fat. And also the saturated fat that can come from milk and that kind of thing. But the beef tallow is really just the fat from beef. And it's mainly a source of saturated fat. I think like a teaspoon of beef tallow will have about 4 to 5 grams of saturated fat in it, which is basically how many grams fit in a teaspoon. It does raise blood cholesterol levels, and it is a risk factor for heart disease. You can cook with it, but it's not something that in the, you know, dietetics community, we recommend that people use as a source of fat. We want to see folks, and we used to tell people, you know, 20 years ago, or 30 years in the 90s, you know, to not use lard any longer or Crisco because that's the source of saturated fat from pork. And then butter is obviously the saturated fat from dairy. So we'd like to see people use less saturated fat, be in alignment with the dietary guidelines, and to use instead liquid fats from oils such as olive oil, canola oil, and the like.
Well, that's my next question, actually, the oils, because I guess the recommendation said that seed oils were worse than using beef tallow. But there's a lot of confusion about oils as well. And we were told,
yes,
not vegetable oil, use canola, then use safflower. So what's the latest on what are good oils to use?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more sentence about the tallow. So again, there, because it's an animal product, it does have some micronutrients in it. Just like there are some micronutrients, say, in molasses, I mean, but not enough to warrant consuming it. So for oils, the recommendation is vegetable oils. Again, we're not going to get liquid oils from any animal products. And so olive oil is high in monounsaturated fats. We know that that is protective for heart disease. Canola oil as well. And I know that those are seed oils. There is some evidence that seed oils may cause inflammation, but there's also equal amount of evidence that they don't. So we don't have overwhelming scientific evidence in any respect that you should not use seed oils. Seed oils are part of a healthy diet, and the oils are healthier than the saturated fats or the solid fats.
Okay, Christy, you counsel people on making behavioral changes in order to eat more healthfully, and that's obviously the tough part for all of us is actually making those changes. So no matter what the dietary recommendations are, putting into action is, how do you decide, okay, so I'm going to eat more vegetables, I'm going to eat fewer sweets. What are some key elements that you tell people to make those changes stick?
I think it's really important to listen to patients' opportunities for change. It's really important to listen to what they're currently doing and try to apply some small, manageable goals that they actually articulate. And they're oftentimes surprised that they actually articulate it. So if you're a good clinician, you're really good at listening to motivational interviewing changes and opportunities for change. Oftentimes patients will come in and say, I really want to make these huge changes. I want to plan all of my meals on Sundays. I want to grocery shop in the morning time on Sundays. I want to make sure that I have all of my meals planned. I want to make sure that I'm exercising more. I want to make sure I'm drinking more. We try to sift through what would be a manageable one or two SMART goal so that they can build on successes. And I think that that's really an important part of a clinician's job is to try to parse out what's realistic and to encourage when there's some successes there. It's really, I've used this my plate, even though it didn't come out until 2011. I've been in this industry far too long. I don't want to tell you my age, but I've been using the plate example for so long. It seems like simple things that help people intuitively do something with a change really helps them identify how to make that change. So if you say to somebody, eat more colors on your plate, put half of your plate in as vegetables, that clicks with them.
Great tip. Well, thank you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the alcohol guidelines and the new federal dietary guidelines and how it only says to limit your alcohol consumption, but we are going to hopefully do an entire show on that later on. But thank you so much for joining us, both of you. Christy Matheson is a licensed dietitian and state representative from Kittery, and Lori Cayley is a registered dietitian nutritionist and SNAP Ed project director at the University of New England. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, and we had help from Sam Tracy. Tomorrow's Maine Calling program is all about high school basketball. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Calling is made possible by listeners who donate and by Curtis Thaxter's Healthcare Group, guiding healthcare practices through employment, corporate, and regulatory matters for 50 years. CurtisThaxter.com. And Cadenza, a listening room in Freeport, whose mission is to share great performers with appreciative audiences. Performance schedule at cadenzafreeport.com.
The lowdown on beef tallow. You heard it here first, folks. I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public, and I'm here with my colleague Luke Merkel, and we're rounding out this Maine Calling program here on the first day of our winter fundraiser, asking for your support for this program and others that you rely on every day. Luke, we're listening to this really interesting and important discussion about nutrition and the public health guidance around the food pyramid, which has literally been turned on its end, and kind of digging into that. Well, what does it mean, and what do we think of it, and how does it compare to the advice that we've been getting for the past few decades? That's what Maine Calling does. That's what it's done for the past 15 years. Show your support for this program. 1-800-866-1475 or going online at mainepublic.org.
Yeah, Keith, this is a fascinating conversation because, guidance on nutrition has changed throughout the years, and you know, it seems like it's been evolving, but there's some kind of, you need this local kind of perspective from people on the ground here in Maine who are kind of giving you their own guidance on kind of how they are digesting these new guidelines.
I see what you did there.
So that's what you're getting from Maine Calling each and every weekday, conversations with Mainers, you know, about topics that are relevant to you. That is what you support when you call 1-800-866-1475.
Yesterday, we learned about the expanding presence of gambling as we approach the Super Bowl weekend. But this is, you know, gambling, not just about sports. It's about anything. Tomorrow, I think Cindy mentioned, the basketball program, which I will be hosting. And I know a little bit about this because I played basketball in Maine in the 1970s. On Friday we'll shift to the importance of the Declaration of Independence, obviously an important document in our history. These are the kinds of conversations that Maine Calling is built around, but it's really built around you, your chance to weigh in. Maybe you have a thought about any of these topics. Maine Calling is your forum to kind of connect with people who also support this programming and this community that is Maine Public. The number, 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org.
Yeah, you know, people listen to Maine Calling and they think about decisions in their own life. So, for instance, today you're thinking about, you know, maybe next time I go to the store, what am I going to pick up to kind of be a little bit healthier? You know, think about what people are listening to, how people are getting their news in Maine. And think about how great it would be if more people had access, if more people tuned in to Maine Public Radio, you know, and got news and information that was trusted and reliable. And, you know, Maine Public has been here for 60 years because of you, because people have donated and called 1-800-866-1475. I don't know if that's been the number for 60 years, but they've called 1-800-866-1475, and they've told us that we think this type of broadcasting, this type of way of delivering the news and information to the people of Maine is important, and we want it to be available for as many people as possible. So please take a moment and help make this possible by calling 1-800-866-1475.
I don't know if it's been the number for 65 years, but I've been here for 35 years, and it's the number that I still remember and still jackknife up in the middle of the night sometimes in here. You know, it's important, I think, to note that for the first time, though, in 65 years, Maine Public is operating without federal funding. And so it's completely driven now by the community support that we've built over those same years, and it's more true now than ever. You know what your standards are, and you trust, perhaps at no other time in history can I recall, a time when the trust that you have in your sources is paramount. You have to be able to know where it's coming from, what the motivations are. And I think you know that with Maine Public. It's a service that's devoted to you, and you're a partner in making it happen. 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org.
And Keith, that is such a great point. And if you really want to help Maine Public in this moment when federal funding has gone away and help us fill that gap in our budget, you can do and also get something that has a very strong Maine connection. This pledge drive we're offering signed and numbered Eric Hopkins prints. Maine artist Eric Hopkins has created new original painting exclusively for Maine Public. So if you donate at the Evergreen level of $42 a month, we'll send you a numbered print, your own print of Eric Hopkins just for you for donating to your public radio station. 1-800-866-1475.
And this is listener-supported Maine Public Radio.